Divorce is never simple, but when businesses trust and millions of dollars are involved, the stakes are even higher. Attorney Kara Kroback joins me to break down what women need to know about navigating a high net worth divorce with confidence and clarity. Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life. This week, we had Kara Kroback on the show, and we had a powerful conversation about high net worth divorces. Kara shared what makes these cases different, why privacy is such a big concern, and the strategies women can use to protect themselves financially during divorce. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Kara Kroback is joining us. Kara is the founding partner of Bespoke Law in Denver, Colorado. Kara brings years of experience handling complex financial situations in divorces, including involving business valuations, executive compensation, and more. Today, Kara and I will be discussing high net worth divorces, why privacy matters, and strategies for women to protect themselves during a divorce. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So for our listeners, Kara, would you please share a little bit about yourself and really how you got into family law and creating your own firm?
Absolutely. So I started out my career in civil litigation for a national law firm and found out pretty quickly that I enjoyed the complexity of civil litigation, but I just really missed the people element. Mm-hmm. And so I made the pivot to doing family law, you know, about 5 years in, because I was really craving both complexity, but also still more of a connection to my community and feeling like I was actually really helping people on a meaningful level. So I started doing high net worth family law because I wanted to continue to deal with the assets and the division of assets in a way that was complex, but help people all the while. And then over some time doing family law, I realized I wanted to kind of take that experience and make something that was a little bit more personal and more tailored. And so that is what led me to found Bespoke Law, my current practice, which focuses on clients who need pretty sophisticated level of strategy, but also really are looking for more of like a boutique hands-on experience.
Okay. And so for our listeners, I think this would be good. A little bit of like, how is a high net worth divorce different from a typical divorce?
You know, in some aspects, they're very similar. And in some aspects, they're very different. I think that just because it's high net worth does not mean it's high stakes, high conflict, high emotions. I think that that just depends on the circumstances. I think there can be, you know, really high conflict cases in the high net worth realm, but there can also be some very high conflict cases in just your everyday divorce. You know that as well as I do. But I do think that what's different in more of the high net worth divorces is just the nature of the assets and the complexity of what's needing to be divided. And so a lot of times I'll see in the higher net worth category, business interests, trust interests, you know, complex compensation packages for executives and multiple assets, real estate, international assets, things like that. And so it's really kind of a matter of taking more of a big picture approach to the financial assets and really making sure you understand the full magnitude, because they just can be a lot more massive in terms of what you're working with.
And in addition to being larger, what kind of assets really can be so complex?
So businesses, I mean, you probably know this in your practice, and it doesn't even really mean some businesses can be complex just because of the way they're set up. So even if they're not like a super high revenue generating business, it doesn't have to be Amazon or Microsoft to mean that the business is complex in terms of how to understand it and then how to value it, and then how to divide it in an equitable way. Businesses can be difficult and a little bit more challenging and nuanced. Stock options, private equity. Private equity is really hard to value, especially because it's not publicly traded. And so trying to come up with valuations for private equity interests, carried interests. You know, real estate portfolios can be really tricky too, because they can oftentimes involve a lot of tax-related implications and tracing issues, you know, because you're sell if it's a, an individual who's buying and selling a lot of real estate, you're going kind of from one asset to the next and trying to trace it. So, you know, there's a, it runs the gamut in terms of the assets and the type of assets that can make a case complex, but there's also other kind of fun assets like art collections that can make things tricky, boats, planes, you know, all of that can add, you know, complexity and layers of additional strategy needed for these types of individuals.
Now, what are some common mistakes you see people making when approaching these cases?
I would say to begin with, not understanding the full picture. I think that making sure that everybody understands kind of what assets are at issue. And a lot of times, especially for the non-moneyed spouse, they don't have that intel or insight to fully comprehend what it is you're starting with. And so I think that that's a common mistake right out the gate is a lack of an understanding of the full picture and or an unwillingness to understand the full picture too. And then the other thing I would say is, and I think that this is true across the board. I'm not sure if you see this in your practice too, Heather, but a lot of times because divorce is something that's so uncomfortable and so it's just such a phase of unknown that people want to rush through it because they're uncomfortable with the process and they just want finality. They want answers. They want to know what this will look like and how they can move forward in their life. And so I do see that sometimes as a challenge as well because they start making decisions based on the emotions and trying to get through the process rather than necessarily treating it like a business transaction, which is what, you know, they should be viewing it as, because at the end of the day, especially when you have, you know, massive estates like this, it needs to be really thought through and taken into consideration all the different potential outcomes. So I'd say that rushing kind of through it to try to get through the uncomfortableness is probably another one.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you and we understand that as lawyers. And I think that often our clients are like, you know, why is everything so slow? And, you know, it's just understanding when the rules of procedure and how long it takes to produce the documents. But also, you know, if we don't get it right the first time, some things just can't be fixed. And that can really set you up, you know, down a path that your lawyer doesn't want. We want to make sure it's done correctly and that you understand the tax implications of what you're getting or not getting, for one example, right? Because then it's like, that can be a real mess and more complicated if you don't know what's going on. So I think when our clients aren't fully aware of the finances and the complexity of them, I think sometimes it does take longer, right? Because we're trying to make sure they were really protected and that they've got things in place to have the right advisors and financial information.
Yep. And so many times people just say, just get it over. Just get me out. Like, get this over with. I don't even care. Just, I can't tell you how often I hear that. And it's like, you maybe don't care right now, but I want to make sure that 5 years from now, you don't think back like I should have cared then. And I wish I had cared more. And I wish that my lawyer had made me care more.
Agreed. I do agree with you. Now, privacy is often a major concern for high net worth clients. What risks should women in particular be aware of?
So in Colorado, divorces are public. The filings are public, which is different, I think, state to state. I know New York is a much more private jurisdiction. And so I think first and foremost, it does depend on where you're getting divorced as the privacy concerns that you might have. But in Colorado, we have, you know, the financial disclosures and some of the more sensitive financial information would be suppressed. But that doesn't mean that, you know, permanent orders, you know, orders that are made by the court, certain filings that you're making, those will all likely be public. And so if privacy is critical, we definitely look for ways to try to limit that exposure, like we try to seal records if we can, or, you know, we sometimes will move the case to a private judge if that's an option in Colorado. Or, you know, I tell everybody, I shout from the rooftops to try to resolve it through mediation or arbitration if your goal is to really preserve keeping it private, because that's the best way to ensure that it's not part of the court file.
Yeah, I think you can never say that enough, because Florida's that way too. You know, they call it sunshine laws, right? Sunshine state, sunshine laws. Like, so it's just really wide open. And a lot of the financial disclosures, maybe not account numbers and things like that, that's redacted, but monies and financial affidavits, like, for example, you know, you file your finances, right? And then there's case law. I wasn't involved in this case. It was a long time ago, but there's case law trying to seal it after the fact, a doctor, because he was being sued. And they're like, no.
No.
So no. And so I think that's also right, because not necessarily, you know, is it maybe, you know, people are going to go looking for you, but if you own more things, if you have more exposure to potentially being sued, they know, you know, they can get so much more information just through public records that are worth thinking about as you're going into it, right?
That's totally true. I actually never really, I've not encountered that type of an issue before. I typically encounter it on the perspective of, I don't want people knowing my money.
Right.
They just don't like that. But it's so true. I mean, there's actual like legal repercussions that could result from it. So all the more reason, I mean, we will often try to file, you know, a motion to suppress, or even some, we can agree to stipulate to it. And even if we agree to stipulate to it, I've had instances where a judge still denies it in Colorado.
And same in Florida. Like, you have to have very compelling reasons. And sometimes it can be related to children. But yeah, the financial part, you know, it's going to be out there. Now, there are agreed. I don't know. Do you guys do a lot of collaborative divorce out there?
We have a collaborative area of the law with it. Yeah.
That those rules, like, we actually have some statutes now and rules of procedure. Those rules can allow, I think, for me to shield some of the things from being filed. But I agree with you. Like, there's, you know, if that's a concern for people, that's a very good reason to work to resolve, right? Because what's it worth for you? It probably could put a price tag on it. So, you know, maybe negotiate on those things, I think.
I mean, yes. And there's also the aspect, and this is probably a total like side conversation, but of NDAs and confidentiality agreements that are part of divorce settlements too, to not only limit the court public filings and limit your, you know, the public seeing your numbers, but also limiting your former spouse from just spilling the tea about how awful you were to them during the divorce or whatever. And so we see that as well. And also that sometimes can come with a value too.
Absolutely. And these are things that, you know, people may or may not think about, but they can be really important, and especially on the forefront, right? To get those things in place to protect you from, you know, all the things we see on the back end a lot of times that people didn't really think about. Now, in these divorces, when you were looking at a high net worth, wealthy clients, it's not just an attorney. You're often working with a whole team. Who are some of the key players that you have found to be really helpful? And why do they matter?
Yep. So typically, obviously, we have our own experts as part of a divorce case. You're going to have your business valuation expert. You're going to have your, you know, trust and estate expert. They'll be helpful for guiding me as a lawyer as like how we're presenting the case. But it's also, you know, I'll oftentimes be working with the individual's family office, their tax advisors. They're very helpful to help us file, you know, financial disclosures, to come up with running numbers, strategizing. A lot of times they're the ones who have a lot of the personal financial statements and a list of the assets and liabilities to streamline for us. Sometimes we work with estate planning attorneys as well to make sure, as we're working through settlements, how do we, you know, set this life insurance provision up in a way that's beneficial to our client and to the other side, to really make sure that the, you know, as you know, the higher net worth, the tax issues become a little bit more complex and are very, very, very important to those type of clients. And so making sure that I'm being advised, because I am not a tax lawyer, I know just enough to know that I need to call a tax lawyer. But having those type of individuals on in the background to be able to kind of weigh in is always really helpful.
Agreed. Now, many women, or some women in high net worth marriages, may not have handled the finances directly. What advice do you have for them as they prepare for divorce?
To not be afraid to learn. And even if that's something that has never been on the table for you, if that's something you've never cared about before, knowledge is power. And the sooner you start learning and understanding, the more empowered you will feel. And also, it's just better for you long term, since you're going to be doing it on your own going forwards. Admit what you don't know, and then have the energy, fortitude, and gumption to figure it out, and roll up your sleeves to try to do that. Ask questions. Don't be embarrassed about not knowing things. You're not alone. We see it all the time. There's no shame in that, but also admitting you don't know so that we can kind of start trying to help educate you, and you can then do the same for us too. I think that's always very helpful.
I do. I think that's an important part. I am sure you have found this in your practice, right? There's just so much education about, one, you're trying, you know, we're trying to help our clients understand the law, like, so that you understand, hey, this is what you're looking at. legally, you know, as that will impact your finances and maybe as to your children, if you have minor children. And there is so much to learn, because then you can make better, our clients can make better decisions. I sometimes, you know, in the past we've had client, oh, you just tell me what to do. What do you think I should do? And I, you know, we all may have our opinion, but like, that's not really my place. I can advise you the pros and cons of the situations, but you know, some things I think are clear, right? They're offering this amount. Okay, that's too low. So no, that would be a no. I'm not, but you know, on particular assets or, you know, what that means for them. You know, I think that for a lot of clients, you know, we're going through this whole process. You have so much interaction, right, with your attorney and your legal team. But when the divorce is over and all the filing, like we stay there, you go on. And so you have all of this financial property issues to deal with on your own.
And I mean, I have the same conversation. I can't tell you if you should stay in the house. I mean, we can advise you. We can get the, you know, a financial planner involved to mm-hmm. run numbers, to calculate, should you stay in the house? But at the end of the day, you're the one who makes that decision. You're the one who, you know, is able to value like the priority of staying in the house versus selling the house and what do you want to do with the rest of your life. So I have that conversation over here in Denver all the time too.
Believe it. Well, and that's also part, you know, Kara, we started out talking about wanting it over, right? Our clients want it over. And I mean, you know, for our listeners, we want it over for you too. We just don't want you to, you know, not do your due diligence, not have a good deal and, you know, walk away from what you're entitled to. But also the feelings, because there's a lot of feelings and emotions about certain assets, particularly houses, whether it's a primary vacation. I have found that 6-8 months down the road in this, you may have a little bit more objectivity and feel a little different than you did that very first day.
And the same is true, honestly, even for, I mean, I've seen that in custody disputes as well.
Yeah.
Like sometimes when you let like the tensions cool a little bit and you're no longer living in the same home, and you're both settling into a schedule and the children are adjusting, suddenly it becomes a lot more palatable. Sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes right. It does. It if you give it a little bit of time to process.
And see how things, yeah, exactly, work out, because yeah. It is emotional. I'm not suggesting to our listeners that you're not going to be emotional. It's just understanding when that might be an emotional decision versus let's get a little space from that decision. And yes, let's see how we're living apart and how that is working out, because like I said, 9-12 months down the road, which is usually about how long cases take, I think you're probably going to be in a much better position to look at things and make decisions based on where you want to live and how much it's going to cost you to live. And like you said, with children, now they can, with healthy parents and functioning, you know, relationships, children could do quite well if the parents are amicable. And even if they're not amicable, the kids do pretty good. And now let's talk about the time, because how do things work in Denver? How long is your average divorce?
Oh,
the settlement, like how long would you say?
So we have a 91-day waiting period from filing. So it can't be any sooner than 91 days. So that's like best blue sky day. Get it done 91 days, get the decree entered. Wow. I would say, you know, depends on the magnitude of the case. Obviously, I have some that are coming up on 3 years. But I've also, you know, we try to do it within like 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. I'd say buckle up for a year, just if you need experts involved, probably, and hope to get it done before that. How about you guys?
I agree. I'm about 12. I would say 12 months is our average, and varies by county, because some of the counties are a bit more backed up, and there are some things you just need to happen through the process. Generally, well, we have mandatory mediation for all family law cases. So everybody's forced. Do you have that in Colorado?
Yep.
Okay. So you know you're going to mediation, and most cases are ripe for mediation. At about 9 months, you know, I had, when I was younger, less experienced attorney, and it was a wonderful attorney on the other side, and very smart, and you know, he knew what he was doing and very nice to work with. However, he just wanted to get to mediation so soon. And, you know, we had all the documents and I agreed. It's kind of hard not to agree to do that. But the case wasn't ready. Our clients were not emotionally ready to make final decisions 3 months after everybody filed. And now some folks are, right? Maybe they've been separated for a while or they just know. And it's not complicated. They both have a good understanding of the financials. But oftentimes, absent that, really need like 6 to 9 months to then get to a point where you're ready. Okay, I'm ready to make the final decisions that are going to end the marriage, because sometimes it's just too soon. 9 to 12 months, I think, is a great spot where average cases that do settle, you know, for trials, these are going to take longer for sure. Now, what are the first 2 or 3 steps you think, or you would advise our women listeners to take if they think divorce might be on the horizon?
Be curious your thoughts on this too. I think that different lawyers have very different opinions about this. I would say, you know, I'm not like somebody who wants, you know, to create conflict and drama right out the gate. And so I don't have any of the advice that I've heard some clients come to me with about, you know, moving money or doing, you know, pretty aggressive things. Mm-hmm. The advice I would give relates to, like, just again, going back to the importance of being educated, gathering paperwork, getting the documents, looking at your tax returns, like just look at them. You know, what do you have? Recognizing that you might not be able to get all of it. And I understand there are definitely relationships where asking for that kind of information could be triggering for conflict. And so in those, you know, don't worry, you'll get it anyway. But for those who can access it, and I think it's always good to arm yourself with information. And then I think researching and learning kind of how the process works so that you're prepared for it and not feeling totally clueless when you first sit down with an attorney to help you. Again, just education. The more you can do it, I think the more in control you feel, right? And it's time where it's topsy-turvy and it's like literally the sky is falling, the more things that you can do to give yourself a sense of control, I think better for you. And so that's why it's getting information from the documents, getting information from lawyers. Obviously, ChatGPT, you can always throw things in there for some quick answers if you're curious about things. We all have had our experiences with a little bit of erroneous answers, but it definitely provides some great guideposts for, like, okay, this is how this is going to work, and here's what I need to be prepared for. So just information.
Yeah, I would say that's my number one advice is begin to gather information. And also begin to start writing down maybe what you know, what you don't know, right? Because there's so much that our clients will come in and they don't know what they don't know. But you may recognize, hey, we bank here, but I've never seen anything. I don't know how much is there. Start gathering the information at least you are aware of and things that you are like, I'd like to know this. I agree with you, Kara. Like if the relationship is one of where you feel like maybe control or secrecy on the finances, that might not be a question that you can ask, which that's a big red flag, but write that down when you're thinking about them, because then at least you can talk with your attorney about that when you're ready. I think the one thing that we both agree is, you know, get education, understand the process. The one thing that most don't want to do.
What? Totally.
I know, right? They don't want to do it. And we're like, no, this is really what you need to do. And they don't want to do it.
I think that it's just a fear response. That's what I've decided is it's just like, I've never had to do this and I don't want to do it because I'm scared about what this is going to look like for me. I've decided it's a fear response.
Agreed. And so you just have to, you know, take one step at a time. And the fear is, it's a real feeling, but usually the things you're afraid of are probably not going to happen, but I think that is what stalls so many women within this process. It's the unknown. I don't know what it's going to be. And maybe I don't want to think about the way it's going to be. I don't want to learn something new on how to do it.
Totally.
And I see that definitely with women. We don't represent men anymore, but I used to way, way, way back in the day. That's not really how they respond to it as much, in my opinion.
I mean, I would say I couldn't blanket statement that, but I've certainly seen the fear response with some of my female clients. So I can attest to that. I think in general, it's like anytime, you know, I have colleagues, former colleagues whose kids are going to college. And that's like a very scary transitional time and makes people feel very overwhelmed and, you know, where they're going to go in that process. Like any time in life where there's a lot of decisions being made that are life altering all in a condensed period, it's going to make people feel scared and overwhelmed and anxious and all of the things. And so, you know, it's not abnormal to feel that way, but certainly to the extent you can fight against that, it's going to be better for you for that experience.
Now, how can women, what would you advise for women to shift their mindset from that overwhelmed to empowered when they're facing these, you know, big decisions, complex financial issues?
So I'm a big believer in the idea of reframing. And so I think that the more that and people going through a divorce can really focus on, you know, kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel. And I recognize that some people don't want the divorce. And so that's a really hurdle to get over. But for those that are on board with the idea of not being married to that individual anymore, it's really a matter of instead of feeling overwhelmed, thinking about like, what will life look like when this is over? How will this be for me? What do I get back from this experience when it's done? You know, like spending time kind of thinking about long-term goals. You know, am I going to be sitting on the beach with a Mai Tai? Like, how will this work when it's all over? Because I think that when you're able to empower yourself with the thoughts of like what this will look like when it's done, helps kind of compartmentalize maybe the feeling of overwhelm for the process.
I think that is a great idea and reframing it. And also maybe compartmentalizing it and maybe by time too, right? Like this is a finite amount of time. It seems like forever. I know our listeners, I know some of you feel it feels like forever, but it will end, right? It will. It'll eventually end. I mean, we all have those cases that went on way too long, but it will end. And then there's just going to be so much more time and ability for you to, you know, go on with your life.
Agreed. It could be better, you know, and nobody deserves to be unhappy. So it can always be better. Life will be better when you get through it.
Absolutely. And have closure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is an interesting question that I think our listeners will want to know. So I'm going to give you the scenario. They own a business, right? Which we know in and of itself, a lot can, you know, sometimes you can't always see everything. You know, you have to work a little bit harder. It can be a little bit more complicated. But their husband runs the business and the wife is thinking that he's planning for divorce and she's worried with that he's hiding assets and he's doing stuff in preparation. What do you tell?
I tell her that if you're feeling uncomfortable, you probably should consider filing because in Colorado, when you file, it starts a clock for an injunction that goes into place to stop the dissipation moving of assets around. So if you're really feeling uncomfortable and you feel like that's something that's close, you know, and on the horizon, maybe that's an option for you. I also tell them, you know, there are forensic accountants that can be appointed and involved in a case that can go back and do the trace as well. And so not to worry that it's gone forever. Most of it can be found. It will be found. It's just a matter of being a little bit patient. What do you tell them?
Somewhat similar, but it's often basically at the end of the day, usually we can find it, right? If there have not been as many offshore accounts and hidden money in ratio to the amount of women who have thought that was what was happening. And so, you know, you want to believe it, like for all the movies we've watched or whatever, or TV show, you know, where they're just, oh, it's all this sneaky stuff going on. It's not always warranted, right? We hire experts to kind of look through things before we go, you know, tracing and after something in the Caymans or something that might not exist. But it's definitely a concern over the years that I've heard many times. And I think just going back to your earlier point, it comes from fear because they don't have as keen of an awareness of everything that's going on. And therefore, it scares them. It is scary. You're like, okay, Hey, all this money, I don't know where it is and I don't trust them.
Totally. And I also just think like big picture, you're going to be okay. Everybody's okay. You're going to be okay. You know, if you, even if it's just going to be okay. And so like having that reality check, I think it's really hard in that moment to process that. But I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Yes. And I do think so. If, you know, also what I would say, well, for a woman who's questioning that, again, begin gathering the information, which I know our listeners will be like sick of it. You lawyers tell us the same stuff all the time, right? But at least maybe find out who your CPA is.
Yes.
Start to inquire and have a conversation because you want to be interested. And something, you know, I've said it on the show certainly before, right? Once they're in the divorce attorney's office, like, okay, that ship is sailed. Like, that's where they're going most of the time. But for any women out there listening, and that's the relationship where you have no knowledge, not to be a Debbie Downer, but if he dies tomorrow, like you're kind of in a bad spot if you don't know where anything is and totally. You don't know what's going on. So it is just prudent just for survival that you have a clue as to what's going on. And so that's for, you know, any of our women listening, because you may have, you know, I think people take their roles in a marriage, right? Somebody's the earner, somebody pays the bills, then I'm person working on the house. And everybody kind of has their different jobs, but it's really important to be a part of that because that could very well happen and you're going to not anything. And that's when you are vulnerable to people who will take advantage.
Yep. Find the team. Help you get your team. Start investigating people who can help you. Financial
Absolutely.
Planners, advisors. Yep.
Yes. And from the financial planners and advisors, that is so important. And they can help educate you, right? Because you have to be comfortable with the folks that I think some women are like, oh, I'm intimidated because I don't know anything, but that's okay. And there are people out there who will help you. And divorce coaches oftentimes are a great tool to help you break down all the things you need to do, but into more palatable portions to take in and do, and usually a really good complement to a divorce attorney because they can help break it down. You don't need the legal advice from them. Sometimes you just need a roadmap as to what to do next.
Yep. And they can be really helpful for us to kind of guide us through the process as well. It's a great part of the team to arm yourself with at the beginning.
Absolutely. Now, what's the one thing you wish every woman understood before entering a high net worth divorce?
Aside from the fact that it's going to take time, I would say just knowing that there are options and we can be creative. I mean, things don't have to be exactly the way that your neighbor had the outcome or your mom and dad's situation was, you know, or the way the ChatGPT says it's going to play out. Like, it doesn't have to be that. And there's a lot of room for creativity if the parties want to work together to be creative. And so being kind of open to that, but also recognizing that being creative does probably take both parties interested in that. But, you know, knowing that you have options, there are different ways to navigate things and you're going to be okay. You will be okay at the end. Everybody is. It's not fun. But by the end, you will be okay.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Kara, before we go, our show is Women Winning Divorce. And I would love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
Oh, man, I wish I knew. I'm trying to figure that out myself. I have three little kids. And so I'm trying to work and raise kids and make sure I have fit time for my family and manage all of the things. And so I guess I would say it probably is just a matter of feeling that you're living it by your own terms and prioritizing things as you want them to be prioritized, making sure that you're making choices that are best for you and feel good for you, regardless of what other people may think of the choices that you're making and regardless of what people expect of you. So I would say it's really just a matter of kind of living your life according to your terms, probably. But that's a hard question. What's yours, Heather?
Well, I would say I have a different days, right? Like some day I kind of break it down a lot. Like, you know, when I was, you know, I don't know the ages of your children. Mine are not all the way grown, but they're, you know, their brains aren't fully formed yet. But we've got some college, med student, high schooler. But back in the early days, I was like, man, if I can get everybody up into school without, you know, we're in Florida, breaking out in a complete sweat in my suit and hair and makeup, you know, and still make it on time, that was a win. And for me, I agree, though, on being able to do things the way I want to and feel as though I'm also making a difference, that, you know, that's rewarding. So that's a win, too.
Love that.
Where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Kara Krobak. To the extent anybody's looking to connect, real estate advisors, estate planning attorneys, financial planners, I'm always happy to build my network and connect as well.
Wonderful. Well, we've reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Kara Krobak, for joining us to share your expertise on high net worth divorce, financial strategy, and protecting women's futures.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.